Board, School Board Policy Committee is now in session. We have two policies for first reading, and one policy for first and final reading, and then a couple topics that we'll touch on afterwards. We have Angela Durham on the phone, and Lydia has fired up the recording device. So without further ado, we will get started with policy 4.600, report cards and grading systems.
All right. So report cards and grading systems, I'm going to call your attention to page 2. Under weighted grades, and you're also going to see this under GPA calculations for high school courses, we have had the honors courses, and we are adding, for clarification, the pre-AP courses. They will be a weighted grade that is the same as an honors course. And you'll see in the weighted grade what percentage, they would get 3 percentage points. And then for the GPA calculation, depending upon what grade they get, A, B, C, D, or F, they would get the same calculation points as our honors classes. That is the only change on this particular policy. And Lee is here. If you have questions,
I can give just a little additional insight. Yep. So each year we go through a process for schools to propose new courses. So this was a new course proposal from Ringwood High School for the upcoming school year to offer a pre-AP history course using College Board's guidance of how that course is structured. We do currently offer a pre-IB course at Franklin High School, but it's the structure of IB is that that's under the course description and course title of an honors course. So this would be a true pre-AP course, which obviously we would need some clarification and policy about how it's weighted as far as those academic weights are concerned. It is the equivalent of an honors course, which is why we made a recommendation for an editorial.
Did you say the honors course is weighted heavier than an AP course?
No, AP is weighted more heavily than an honors.
Okay.
So a standard level than honors, which pre-AP would weight the same as honors, and then IB and AP together.
Okay, thank you.
Sounds like a really good change.
Yeah.
A really good addition.
Yeah. And the likelihood is that we'll have other schools, once this initial course is offered and taught, at one school, what typically happens is other schools pick it up the following year, but this is the first pre-AP course that we would be offering in Williamson County officially.
It's a history, right?
It's a history course, that's right.
Any questions? Angela, do you have any question on that one?
Nope, that sounds pretty clear.
It's easier to see on print too. On page 2, you can see the grid, the matrix for the courses, which makes it pretty clear.
Perfect. All right. Yep.
Then we'll move on to the next one, which is 4.6051, credit requirements for graduation.
Okay, and Lee and I will tag team on this one as well. You'll see on page 4 the changes regarding online courses. Two changes. Number one, in lines 4 and 5, we are asking that for enrollment, the students consult with their high school counselor, and they should also be approved by the school principal or designee prior to enrollment. The other change that we're recommending is regarding how online courses are on their high school transcripts. Currently, it is a pass-fail with no GPA unless taken through our WCS online learning program. That was something that we started when we started the online learning program. With the HOPE scholarship, it is important for us to change this from a pass-fail to using that same letter grade or GPA assigned by the institution awarding the credit. So we'll have some from out of state obviously move here with online courses that we would accept for credit, and then we also have students who change schools within the state of Tennessee. And so we want to make sure that all of our students have the same playing field.
So just I'll add on to what Dana just described. So when we added online courses and a distinction about how we would treat them was obviously pre-COVID and wasn't something that explicit communication was coming from the state in regards to post-COVID. There is now explicit communication from the State Department indicating that the purpose of the and the intention of the Tennessee Uniform Grading Policy is that across the state of Tennessee, all courses, regardless of their origin, whether it's online or transfer credit, be treated the same within the state of Tennessee. So now there is more explicit communication indicating that if a student takes an online course from an accredited institution, that we do uniformly across the state of Tennessee award that academic credit that's earned rather than pass-fail. So we do recommend this change in transition at the start of next academic year, because we do have students who registered for courses, they're completing courses with the understanding of how the policy was previously written. With the caveat that if we have a student who is negatively affected by this, that our counselor will work with them, because the state's expectation is that they would be not be punitively reflected on their transcript as a result of this explicit nature in our policy versus the explicit expectation of the State Department. If that makes sense. I don't know that I explained that super clearly, but I hope you got what I meant.
Yes, Josh.
It's not really pertaining to the policy so much, but just out of curiosity, is there a limit on the number of online courses that a student can take? Someone who's enrolled in a traditional school, is there a limit on the number of online courses they can get credit for?
Great question. So there is very clear guidance from the state now, post-COVID, that indicates that if a student is taking more than half or more of their courses online, they must be enrolled in an online high school. So our current students, if they choose to take half their course load or more online courses, then they are transferred from our traditional school to our online school.
Okay, thank you.
As their school of record.
And I failed to mention this at the beginning of the meeting, but if y'all may notice, Superintendent Golden is not here. He is next door in the auditorium with Rachel Farmer and Mark Samuels presenting our budget to the County Commission, Budget and Education Committee. So,
and that the timing of that meeting was changed at the last minute because Sheila and I came to attend that meeting at 4:30, and so we got here and Tommy Little informed us that it had been changed. So I think he would be here if they hadn't changed it at the last minute.
Yeah. Yeah, so he did want us to go ahead and get started, but I meant to tell you at the beginning where he is.
Thanks to you two for cooling your heels for 90 minutes prior to this meeting. Any questions from anyone on this one?
I would like to point out one additional edit. On page 2, lines 11 and 12.
Oh, yeah.
There is an additional strikeout.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Thank you, Lee.
Do you want to give the initial explanation and I can...
No, you're good. Okay.
So it is allowed by the State Department to allow a fine art waiver. In Weems County, we have not. This hasn't been our practice. As a part of our belief statement that we believe students should have academics, arts, and athletics as a part of our mission as a school district, one. And secondly, in a college-bound atmosphere such as Williamson County Schools, most colleges and universities still require a fine art requirement, and so we certainly believe that we shouldn't take college as a possibility out of the realm for any of our students, of the realm of possibilities, and so it hasn't been our practice to allow the fine arts waiver, and when we updated this with recommendations from TSBA, it's allowed through the state. But our recommendation is, while we're updating this policy, to strike that out, because it is in our practice.
Thank you. We're all good? All right, we'll move on to the next one, which is for first and final reading, editorial change to 6.3090 tolerance offenses.
So this will be, since it is an editorial change, this would go for one reading, would be our recommendation. And on page 3, you will see the editorial comment. We do have, we set out that the disciplinary hearing authority has certain administrators that are part of that disciplinary hearing authority. And the way that this is worded, it would always include the student support services director, in this case, Maria Griego. And we would like to include and or designate. We still want someone who would hold a special education license to sit on that, but it would allow someone besides Maria. That has been our practice at times because she is not always available. We also have a 504 coordinator who is a licensed. We have several specialists who are also licensed administrators. And we just want to be real clear in policy that our practice and policy match.
Perfect example is in leading the DHAs, often invite Dr. Orier, who is a licensed special educator, to be a part of the DHA process as a decision maker based on her expertise in that field when Maria is not available.
I have a question.
Sure.
Please.
When I was looking at it ahead of time, I didn't notice what was being added. I thought it might have something to do with that assault, the teacher assault act or bill. But I know that kind of has been shut down. But
right.
It got me thinking for number 5 on page 1, not line 5, line 32, section 5.
Sure.
Would it be beneficial to add something kind of what we were discussing about that bill that would exclude kids with disabilities if it was a result of their disability that the assaults, quote unquote, happened? They were suggesting an amendment that said something like, shall not physically or knowingly assault or with intent to harm, something like that. So if it is a part of the disability manifesting.
So that's a really good question. So before we, a student with a disability, before we discipline, we have a manifestation meeting we have to under federal law.
Mm-hmm.
So this, the way that this is worded for the assault is the code, is the Tennessee Code annotated for zero tolerance offense. So I would like to keep it the same, but to your point, that is a practice that we have, and when we have a form that an administrator would fill out to send to central office anytime that there would be a out-of-school suspension, that form is very clear to say, does the student have a 504? Does the student have an IEP?
Mm-hmm.
Was a manifestation hearing held?
Mm-hmm.
And if that answer is no, we've got a problem.
Right.
So we do have some safeguards in that to make sure that we're having that manifestation. Because to your point, if it is a part of the disability, there should not be punishment. That would be a, well, with a few exceptions under federal law, 45 days for drugs, but assault would not necessarily fall in there.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yes.
Dana, back to the appeal section we previously talked about. Is there, to your point, the designee has to be someone who has the same education or training, I believe you said, as Maria does?
They would have to be a license, so they'd have to have that license. Uh-huh.
Is there any value in specifying that about the designee?
So that first sentence on line 7 is that it shall consist of 3 county administrators, and since it's an administrator, they've got to hold that administration license.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But you're stating, should the designee be explicit as well, that her designee shall be someone who holds the same?
The student support service, yeah, I mean, the student support services director is assumed to have that license. The designee may or may not, unless...
They would still have to have that license as an administrator, otherwise they couldn't be her designee.
Probably not a huge deal, I just wanted to...
No, that's a fair question, yeah.
Got another question. this note for graduating seniors on line 26, what is a reasoned judgment offense?
Which page it is?
Page 2.
Page 2.
I'm sorry, yeah, page 2.
Page 2.
So we have zero tolerance offenses, which are set out in statute. The board, when this policy was, and that's on the first page, those are set out in Tennessee law. The board, at that time, included one offense that is not part of Tennessee law, that is alcohol. So all of those, when you read through the zero tolerance offenses, there's not a choice. It's an up or down. If this is what was committed, here is your punishment. Okay, so that's kind of section one. Section two is the reasoned judgment offenses. State law and our board identified some other zero tolerance offenses depending upon the facts of the incident. They may be what we call, quote unquote, reasoned judgment, and that's from the statute. So that principal has some discretion in, or administrator, principal AP, has some discretion on the range of punishment. The zero tolerance of, on the first page, we're looking at ALC for 180 days. This gives the, if it's not one of those offenses, but it is a assault, possession, under 1, 2, or 3, then the principal can decide a range between 20 days to that 180 days or a calendar year. So we pulled that reasoned judgment from the statute. So you may hear administrators talk about it was a zero tolerance offense or it was a zero tolerance reasoned judgment. It gives them that discretion.
Yeah, I like that's good.
Has that language been in there for a long time?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It was here when I got here. I don't know, Gary, do you know how long it's been in here? This policy
right.
was,
yeah,
yeah
18 years
long. I'd say, let's see, it looks like it was issued in 2014, and I don't know that much has changed with that zero tolerance law since then.
Yeah, and this is one that's largely driven by statute, I guess.
It is, yes. It is largely driven by statute. The only piece on that front page that isn't driven by statute, that was a board decision, was to make possession of alcohol, transmit, use, be under the influence, a zero tolerance, mandatory 180-day offense. The other offenses... drugs, drug paraphernalia, weapons, and assault are all statutory. And to your point, that the alcohol piece has been a zero tolerance since I've been here. I think it probably when the policy was first created, that was the will of the board.
Okay.
I've heard of students that have gotten middle school students in particular, maybe high school students that have gotten caught up in the handle part of that, where all of a sudden somebody is handed, here, can you put this in your locker for me, or here, hold this real quick, and runs away, and there. And so the zero tolerance in that situation does not provide for that type of situation where they are handling something but do not have knowledge of what they're handling, in a bottle or a Coke or a plastic container of some type. So I would point out that that's a tough rule.
Mm-hmm.
If your child just happens to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, but not part of the offense to bring the alcohol on campus in the first place.
So we have had those situations before, and I see Lee nodding her head. One of the things, and each case is different, that the disciplinary hearing authority would hear, and it is like a hearing where the child and their parents are involved, and then three people that are listed are the hearing authority, and then someone is facilitating that hearing. One of the factors that we would look at, though, for alcohol or drugs is going to be an intent. I'm not going to say that I've heard every one because I haven't, but one of the factors that the DHA looks at with possession of drugs or alcohol is did they know what they had? Sometimes we find that a student did, and sometimes we find that a student did not know. And that becomes a decision of the DHA to either uphold that punishment or to determine that there's not enough evidence.
Yeah, I don't see that it's written to give them that.
It isn't. So it's not written in policy, but what is, and what do you want to pop in?
Well, yes, thank you. To me it is, when you talk about unlawfully possessing, and so if I put something on your person and you don't know it, I think you could argue that I'm not unlawfully possessing because I was unaware that I was in possession. And so oftentimes when those appeals come to the DHA, we hear them articulate that I didn't know, and here's the evidence that I didn't know, and here are the student statements that are indicating that I didn't know. Or the principal or administrator is taking those things into consideration at the time that discipline is administered, and then they're documenting it's not unlawful possession because the individual who was in possession had no idea that someone said, hold my water bottle for a second, that there was anything in it besides water, and there was no reason for them to know that, as an example. So I would argue that unlawful piece gives that discretion.
So the way I read that, Lee, is that the unlawful piece is in line 8, but everything else is pretty straight up. There's not the unlawful term in the other three. Strictly says, shall not possess, handle, transmit, use. So it's not, there's not a, that mean, maybe that's the way it's been implemented.
It is, yeah.
But I don't think it's written. I don't think it's written.
This piece comes explicitly from the state guidance.
Correct.
Yeah, but we add the alcohol piece to it, so.
Correct.
My thought would be that you put something knowingly possess, or if you say unlawfully possess, I guess is to cover that across all of the options, just to make it more clear, because I know that there's been times where it's been communicated to parents that it's pretty straight and there's not an option. So when they're looking at the policy, they're not necessarily knowing historically on the implementation standpoint. Anyway, it's probably not the reason to have brought this forward, but it's probably
thinking of
examples.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd argue that it would always be unlawful for a child under 21 to be in possession of alcohol, so regardless of the circumstances.
What I'm arguing here, though, is that the policy, the explicitness of the policy, the way it's written, could, in theory, catch students that were not part of the intent, and it does not give, the way it's written, does not give an option to take that into consideration. So that's kind of where I offer an edit on it.
Do you think that we're knowingly before possess accomplishes what you want?
Yeah, I do. I do.
There's a cross reference there, Dana, to the TCA. I'm just curious in reference to paraphernalia.
Mm-hmm.
If our language comes straight from TSA, TCA rather, or
not with alcohol, because that is not part of the
zero. On paraphernalia.
Paraphernalia. Mm-hmm. What I believe that TCA is, yes, that defines what drug paraphernalia is or is not.
This language, you believe, is exactly, it mirrors exactly what is a TCA.
I believe so, yes.
For 1 and 2.
For 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And 4 and 5.
So, the suggestion is to include the word knowingly.
Mm-hmm.
for three.
We got thoughts about that?
I think you make an excellent point, and I think you're right. But if it's state law, and the practices is already doing that, and it is quasi in there, as Dr. Webb pointed out, I have concerns that maybe it's a dangerous precedent, and is the cure worse than disease? Because we've always had it as a practice that when we're pulling the state law into policy, we do it verbatim. It's certainly not the first time, and certainly won't be the last time, that the state law is poorly written or grammatically flawed, and you know, we can pick at it. But that's a concern I have. It's just opening up that Pandora's box where we start editing language that's from state law into our policy and where that could lead. So I do have that concern. Although I agree with you, I think the point is more than valid.
Well, I reiterate what Dana said is item three is not state law. That's our inclusion.
That was a board addition.
That was a board addition.
Yeah. Well, that wouldn't apply. It's where it is. State law is taken verbatim from the TSA.
Well,
on
I'm missing right. something. I can't hear you, Eric, at all. I'm sorry.
I'm doing my
thing. Be a little louder.
You're enjoying dinner, but.
I'm sorry.
So let's.
The concern was we don't want to rephrase state law, but this is not really a state law.
Number three.
Portion, right. Number three in the alcohol topic.
I'm concerned, but we've always had the precedent before of any time we're pulling state law into our policies.
Right.
That we've always put in there verbatim. This is what the state law says, this is what it is. Even when in the past we've seen things where it's not grammatically correct or not as clear as it could be. But we don't want to get into the habit of changing state law. So that's my concern with it. Elliot made the point that the alcohol portion isn't state law, which I don't have an issue with in that case. If it's an improvement.
I don't have an issue with it either, knowingly.
It's more on the other one where it is being taken directly from TSA and... There's where I do have concerns.
So, what I would like to do is take your suggestion and play with it. Understand what you're saying, and here's my hesitation with it. Because this is not a TCA zero tolerance, there's some caveats that I need to be careful with the zero tolerance law. So I want to make sure that whatever language we change meets what you're wanting to do, but also keeps alcohol as a zero tolerance offense.
I'm not wanting to remove alcohol as a zero tolerance.
What I'm wanting to do
is protect children who are caught up, you know, who unknowingly are given something to hold, and then all of a sudden they're now part of the crime.
Right,
because
I get that.
And so the concept from a child's view is constantly, you know, how is this fair?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so give our
committee the opportunity to where it's not hard-coded that, sorry.
Right, and at this point, I don't think it is, but I understand what you're saying. There is case law out there when you have a zero tolerance offense that is not set out in statute, so I want to make sure that whatever language we have is consistent with that case law so that we don't run afoul.
All right, so how long does that take you?
It will not be ready by this month, May.
So May?
Yeah, I can bring it back in May.
Mm-hmm.
We would need a... What we could do is just turn this into a first reading.
Yeah.
Instead of a first and final, and then it may make it a second reading.
Is there anything time sensitive about the editorial change in here right now that you wanted to...
We have been making it work.
Okay.
We can make it work.
All right.
So first and second, that works.
All right. So that'll be for first reading then.
Yeah, we'll just change it to a first reading.
Great. Angela, I accidentally muted us for a minute.
Yep, that'll.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah, that'll. It'll. I can follow everything.
All right. Great. I dropped the phone unceremoniously. And then the next two board policies for discussion. Dana sent the note about that, but go ahead, Sheila.
No, you know, I think this is a really super important thing to talk about. And the only thing that concerns me is, were you the one who brought the discussion? I don't remember who brought the discussion. The only thing that concerns me is Jason's not here for this. We weren't planning on Jason not being here. And for him to be in this discussion, it kind of makes me a little nervous. And plus, legislation is currently in session, and there's a lot of things that could change this policy on this. And so I think it's worthwhile. I mean, if we want to talk about it, I'm fine with that. But without Jason here to kind of have a back and forth with.
Well, I requested these be put, be brought back.
Okay, and I agree, they need to be.
I'm not in any hurry.
Yeah.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I don't care if this takes 2 months.
Okay.
But we've got to get the instructional materials, 4.400, straightened out, and then the adoption process.
I totally agree. And so
that's fine. That's
can
fine.
We put it off until Jason's here and then
that would,
and legislation, so we know what legislation's doing?
Absolutely.
Perfect.
That's fine. Just that's as long fine. As it comes back.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, it will be. And I'll tell y'all, a piece of the legislation, we have to have a policy on the new law that Governor Lee has signed with the age appropriate. So we're going to, regardless of our discussion tonight, mm-hmm. once that the bill has passed, he has signed it, but it has not yet been codified in the different sections. But once that happens, we're going to have to develop a policy, regardless of if we looked at these. But I think it makes sense to work on that policy as well as the other ones.
Well, and then
the other
and
piece.
I spoke to you about.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And
well, and I wanted to honor
4.403 also.
Correct.
We
yes.
need to go over this with a fine tooth comb because we can't have what happened this year happen again.
That's really
so
important.
That was yes. what I was going to say. As to 4.403, there is a second bill that is going through that has not passed yet. It's passed the House. It has not made it yet out of the Senate that deals with obscenity.
That's the definition of porn. Yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Which there
I've got
are
a
some,
definition of one right in here.
Yeah, there's some pieces that don't line up with the age appropriateness law. So I think I would anticipate either that law is not going to move forward or someone in the Senate's going to amend it. Because they are very much in conflict. And I think at the last Senate committee meeting, not the one today, the one last week, one of Governor Lee's advisors came and spoke against the obscenity legislation because his view is we have passed, and I've signed off on the age appropriateness, the obscenity law bill bypasses quite a bit of local control compared to the legislation Governor Lee has put forth, and there are some timing differences, and his advisor also stated that they believe there'll be a constitutional challenge to the obscenity bill because it would require library books to be taken off the shelves immediately for 30 days, potentially in violation of the First Amendment. So there's some definite pieces of that legislation I'm watching to see what ultimately that's going to look like.
All right, what are we talking? How many books did we have in our library total? There was something like 13 books that they had.
Oh, the original?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 13.
Okay.
13 total for high school and middle school
right.
combined. Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
And of those, there was probably maybe half that were some people felt were obscene. So what is wrong and what violation are we making if those books are pulled off the shelf temporarily to look them over? Are you going to sit there and tell me that the federal court's going to come in and sue us to look at some books?
I think that the way that the obscenity bill is written, there is the potential of violating First Amendment rights. Yes.
But it's not, we've got a right. The librarians have a right to look at it.
Correct.
But the superintendent of the school and the school board has no right.
That's not what I said.
Well, but that's what I'm saying.
Right. And what the argument would be is that other children have a right to read something. So it becomes a very circular, and what we've got to look at is looking at everyone's rights.
Well, I'm not a book burner. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff, and I've got copies of it right here, sexually explicit acts that, in my eyes, has no place in education. What are you educating them for with instruction?
And someone else may say, I want my child to read that because of my child and my child's life experience. Or because I don't put any boundaries on what my child reads. That was my personal experience. My parents let me read whatever I wanted to.
And a parent can still say, I don't want my child to be able to check that
book out. Yeah, but they can say that. They can say that after the child checks the book out. See,
well, you could say it before. You could say it any time. Once you know of the book, you can tell.
Why not, in this situation, why can't we have a policy that states this book is X-rated? So if you want to take this book out, your parents need to send a note. That protects everyone, not just what if.
So Dan, are you talking about plans for the future of this policy?
Well,
implementation?
We brought up library books.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about maybe a policy giving our school the right to have a rating scale.
Okay.
Rather than what the librarian said that, if you've got a problem with some curriculum,
mm-hmm.
or not curriculum, but a book, let us know and we'll put a note in your child's file.
So I just want to clarify. So you're talking about a suggestion for the future policy.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just
not the current policy, because
right.
we have to abide by our current policy now, I think is what we...
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got you.
Because
yeah.
we don't know exactly what...
I just wanted to clarify.
It's going to look like moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, it would be interesting, though, because I, maybe this is a discussion at the next work session is, just kind of put what's going on aside right now, but then discuss a rating system. Because I've been thinking about that, too. Just, what do you think that would look like? And that would be a really good discussion, because I've got some ideas, because I think that's also and it's not a cut and dry. My idea is not a cut and dry rating system. It's more, especially for elementary, is this could potentially be. Parents, be aware, potentially, you have the access to the book, and you can tell the librarians it's not for my child. So it wouldn't be a hardcore, PGG and all that. It would be more of a subjective, but letting the parents know.
Might be sensitive.
Content. Might be sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to look at that. So I think that'd be a great discussion.
So right. But I'm.
I agree with Sheila.
Thank you.
I would like to do that too.
Yeah. I thought that was my Alexa. Oh, I was like.
I bet that was Sheila.
Yeah.
Said, like, don't say the word Alexa.
Yeah.
But however we do it, they shouldn't be, made available. I mean, if a parent wants them to read that stuff, they can get them online after school.
Well, there's some that
you do not have to teach that stuff to our students. You're not teaching it, but make it available.
Yeah, there's some things I think they're going to look at in that respect, and especially with the legislation coming through. So, but that's good. Thanks.
So I have a question for staff. Do you want us to submit ideas prior to the next meeting, or would it be better for us to wait and see how this all pans out?
I have still the 4.403 ideas, which obviously right now I don't want to move on because we still have legislation coming.
Yeah.
And the way that they are amending things, it's happening on an hourly basis. So I don't even, so I'm fine if you want to send ideas, but realize things are changing.
Well, that's why I asked, because there's nothing that prohibits us from looking at this on our own and being prepared for that discussion and jotting down ideas. Mm-hmm. But it probably would be better to couch those ideas in what once the law is passed,
once we know where we're headed. Yeah, because some of the discussion, we had a great 4.403 discussion that I didn't contemplate at the time the legislation would look like what it looks like now.
Yeah.
That's going to kind of change even that 4.403 discussion. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm happy. I'm collecting ideas in a file. So okay. I'm happy if you want to send me things. It just may be, to Dan's point, a couple of months before you have a finished product.
That makes sense.
No, this is too important get in a rush and
get it
you
right.
Know, I mean, I called you and we talked, I don't know how long.
We talked at least an hour, Dan.
Yeah.
Josh.
Good luck, she didn't bill you.
I know you're in there. Go ahead, Josh.
I hear she rounds up, too.
Absolutely.
Dana, how much do you think of what's pending in the legislature right now, if it were adopted, would require a new policy versus would be incorporated into our existing ones?
So the age appropriateness, which has passed, speaks of a policy. Does it matter? The LEA needs a policy to set this out. I can't tell you yet, and part of it is where they're going to place some of these laws depending upon where they pass. But it may make sense for us to have a brand new policy. It may make sense for us to incorporate where I was thinking about where we were with policy 2 months ago is not where I am right now. And the other piece is I want input from staff and not just leadership team. I've already reached out to our head librarians, lead librarians, I think. Jenny Lopez is here with curriculum. I mean, it's. I want everybody's idea on how to make this make sense, including board members, because it's going under the current one with Governor Lee. A lot of decisions are going to be made by the board. The way that law is written. Fewer of those decisions, I would submit, if the obscenity bill passes as it is currently written, would be made by y'all. So trying to think through those two is a bit challenging right now, which is why I'm hoping they merge closer together.
And when you said the board, you meant Board of Education.
Correct.
State Board of Education, not.
No. Y'all will be deciding.
Okay. Yeah, so.
LEA. The LEA, under Governor Lee's law, the Age Appropriateness Act of 20, Age Appropriateness Materials Act of 2022, it is the local Board of Education that is truly, with whatever policy and that we set out, will be making those decisions. Yes, ma'am.
Doesn't most of the legislation require the local boards to actually read the books? I've seen that in several places that the boards would be responsible for reading the books.
Oh, and that's measure?
Yeah.
No, but they, if it passes, I believe they have to vote on it. which means you should read it.
Yeah, yeah, well, it kind of goes
I don't think,
saying,
yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I don't think it requires you to read, but if it yeah. pulls, we'll become a book voting board.
That's right.
If we're not careful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, between
which
words.
Is not a really mm-hmm. good place
I mean,
to
yeah, there too. I can
That's
see
right.
how. So this is the.
I've still got all the books if anybody wants to borrow them.
The Age Appropriate Materials Act. So this would be a policy that we would have to have in place before next school year. And that policy is for developing and reviewing school library collections. Procedure for the development would be part of a library collection. A procedure for the local board of education to receive and evaluate feedback from a student, parent or guardian, or school employee regarding one or more materials in the library collection. So kind of the 4.403. And a procedure to periodically review the library collection at each school to ensure that it contains material appropriate for age and maturity levels. You also, as the board, shall evaluate each material for feedback according to the procedure that you establish. So I think arguably part of your procedure could be, as a decision maker, I mean, I would tell you from a legal standpoint, I would recommend that you read the book before you decided on it. But
that's usually good.
And then if the board determines that the material is not appropriate, then the school shall remove that material from the library collection.
And just thinking ahead, would that legislation still also rely on the Miller test?
Yes.
Which is, it has to be of some type of literary value.
Well, it would for obscenity.
Okay.
So this is age appropriateness.
Okay.
There is not, so to your point, with the obscenity, the Miller test, but there is nothing set out, and I think that is one issue. Legally, we're going to have to ferret out.
Okay.
Because that definition is not included in this legislation.
Thank you for walking us through this, because it certainly means that we should probably wait. Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Well, that's part of what I was getting at when I asked the question is
yeah.
maybe it's worth taking all these policies as a package.
I don't disagree with that.
Because they're
working them all the time.
They're going to be so intertwined.
They are intertwined, and it may be that we determine we have too many. You know, we've got several in this section, and
right.
it may be that we want to narrow them down.
They piggyback one another.
They do,
right.
mm-hmm. and so you've got to read one to infer into another one. So that I do think there's some wisdom in 4.400 through 4.403, with looking at all of those at the same time.
So for the work session, I think it would be really helpful to get the up-to-the-minute update on the legislation, because if this needs to be in place for the next school year, that is only 4 months and only three scheduled board meetings between now and then. So once the legislation does take effect, it's off to the races for getting this
might be
for consideration.
A good special one too. Special
mm-hmm.
work session.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wouldn't mind doing a special work session just on this. That's me personally.
Mm-hmm.
So. Can I have a comment?
Sure.
So, some of you know it. So I went up when the Sipicki bill. It's one of the obscenity bills. It's the House version of it. Was being discussed, and it is a dangerous bill. I'm going to editorialize and tell you that. Dana said it would allow one person to say, I have an issue with that book, and it's immediately pulled off of every single library shelf in every school for 30 days. Representative White asked, you know, what about the Holy Bible? And he said, yeah, that would be one too. One person would go, I have a problem with something in the Bible. And they would pull it off the shelf immediately for the 30 days. And then it would go before the Board of Education, the local LEA, immediately at the next meeting. So that could be as soon as 31 days to a max of 60 days. And then they would have to vote at that meeting on whether or not to pull it out permanently. So a simple majority would take it out, and then it would be forever gone.
Well,
off
what are they saying, though? I mean, they're
well,
going to...
Hang on, Dan. Let me...
Yeah, okay.
I appreciate it, but you're going to stop my train of thought, and I'm going to forget where I am if you ask me anything right now with it. So that was one thing that I saw. It came out. The sponsor of the bill was asked about would someone be able to repeatedly make complaints about the book and pull it again and again and again. He said no. And he said, okay, show me in the legislation where it says that you couldn't repeatedly do it, and it's not in there. It uses the criminal definition of obscenity, which is something we've never had before. And so he said, so, you know, good news on this updated version. It's not going to put librarians in jail if you disagree with them, which the first version potentially could have. But it can penalize school districts financially. Mm-hmm. If the Board of Education approves the book, as said, there's no timeline for how long that approval is. So theoretically, someone could just do it. And another representative who's on the committee said, well, if I'm wanting to remove a book de facto, I just bring up a complaint every 30 days,
right.
And it again and again and again, and it's any single book. That you want that
is
way.
Is that what they're discussing, though? Is that's one of the problems with it?
One of many problems.
Yeah, that is a problem.
But is it also the definition of obscenity? That's what they're trying to, because if there is a true good definition of obscenity, okay, uh-huh. I mean one that is not gray, if that is, because mm-hmm. I was talking to TSBA about this,
right.
If that is defined with the points that you were bringing up,
right.
That makes it a little bit easier because the librarian can pull them off the shelf, but there is also a test. If it doesn't, they can't just arbitrarily.
Well, this bill, they can't.
Right, and that's what they're trying to change.
Yeah,
yes.
And that's different from the governor's
yeah.
version.
That's
yes, exactly.
And
away.
It doesn't define the obscenity.
Yeah.
It says the local LEA. So in some cases, you've got a 7-member board. So you've got a 5-member board.
Mm-hmm.
So 3 individuals could, you know, put enough political pressure on, could remove a book off the shelf forever. You know,
well, so. Obscenities... to some people, you know, is a customer.
It's very subjective.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that is very subjective.
You know what I'm saying? And that's
mm-hmm.
that's not what we're looking for. That's not
no,
what we're
absolutely.
Trying to do.
Yep. Absolutely.
So that's what we need to be.
And then
yeah.
it also, in our version of it, obviously, when we reconsider stuff, we kind of go, well, who are all the interested parties in this? There's parents, there's teachers, there's administrators, there's staff, there's the Board of Education. And so in our policy, we have representatives from each of those groups that do it. This one would remove the teachers, the administrators, and the parent representation out of it and make it purely political. You know, so it would be just the Board of Education. And then the last kind of real quick point to bring up with this is there were individuals who were in favor of this bill also testifying. One of the groups said, we've got 100 books that we've already identified. So as soon as this is passed, we're going to complain about these. So in practicality, and I don't know that we have 100 books of those, let's say we've got 30 of them, just pulling a number out of the hat. That's then 30 days, and then our very next meeting, we've got 30 books
right.
to come up.
Right.
So to your point about trying to read them, I'm a quick reader, but I ain't that quick.
And those could
they've
be
gotta,
a lot.
They've
got
to come up with
bucks.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and of course these are all for
with
the most higher level length books.
Lie.
They're not seahorses. They're
that's why
you
it's
know.
Being held on.
You think
they're
chapter books?
I would love to have chapter just for this.
I'm going on a limb. Say that.
All right.
Okay.
Well, so we'll have some discussion of this at the work session.
And I will continue to update y'all because we are my office is watching this. It's a
been
an entertaining session. I'm ready for everyone to
it's a good discussion to kind of cover the complexities
mm-hmm.
of it and even have a better understanding of how difficult it would be to go down one path and have to completely
change
course. So
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Okay.
And hopefully, and it may be by work session, I have a more definite idea on the obscenity bill
right.
and where we're headed.
Okay. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you so much.
Anyone have anything else? All right, Angela, we will let you go.
All done?
All yes. Done. We are adjourning.
Bye, Angela. All right. See ya.
Thank you.
Bye.